And I'm going to err on the side of full disclosure and disclose both my employment at Resource Development Associates and also the funders for the two projects that I'm going to be talking about. That is very sensitive. Which is the California Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission and the Lake County Department of Behavioral Health, who contracted with RDA for these two studies. So what I first want to do is talk about participatory planning and evaluation in terms of, this is going to get super practical in terms of talking about promising practices in how to conduct planning and evaluation, and also then some practical implementation strategies. That these were identified through research and then also through a case study. But whether it's researchers, service providers, consumers of service, family members, pretty much the whole diversity of stakeholders, there is something in here in terms of how to bring people together to really build the capacity of all stakeholders, regardless of where you, what part of the table you're holding up in that process, to really both serve the system better in terms of taking experience from people with lived experience, their families, and other disciplines, as well as enhancing people's own recovery and their ability to contribute back through meaningful contribution. So just to set the context, that in California in 2004, the Mental Health Services Act was passed, which is a 1% tax on personal millionaires. So if you made over $1 million of personal income, you had to kick back 1%, with the intention to expand and transform the public mental health system in California. Since then, there's been deep cuts in other funding sources, and the MHSA tax makes up about 50% of the mental health services budget in California. Regardless of maintenance of effort and supplementation rules within the legislation. Part of the MHSA is that it requires a community planning process that involves a legislatively defined group of stakeholders, including people with lived experience, family members, and people from other disciplines, so criminal justice organizations, health, veterans, education, and I think there's a list of about 12 or 13 different groups that must participate. You have to have that kind of local planning process in order to expend the funds, again, which is about 50% of each county's public mental health budget. So the first project I'm going to talk to you about was, we did a participatory research project to evaluate the participatory planning of MHSA. Right, this is where it is. And so what we did is the Oversight and Accountability Commission, which was created through the MHSA, hired RDA to conduct an evaluation of community program planning processes throughout the state. We were able to talk to all 60 jurisdictions either gave us data or participated in some sort of data collection. With the intended purpose of evaluating the effectiveness of community program planning throughout the state, as well as identifying promising practices. I'm going to give you the highlights of the evaluation and really get into the promising practices, because my intention of presenting this today is so that you're able to take those ways of really bringing people together and those data-driven, data-identified promising practices, and take those back to either your research planning or service design strategies. This was a collaborative project between RDA and a separate contract through California to the Client Stakeholder Project, which was a group of an association of peer-run organizations who provided us as the evaluator support along the way, and it really was an iterative process. In terms of the evaluation, so in true parts, kind of based in empowerment evaluation, participatory action research, this was an iterative process throughout the way. So we gathered everyone together, our staff, the Client Stakeholder Project did an evaluation planning summit. We co-designed research questions, logic models, and began to develop the data collection tools. And then we also provided a training to the Client Stakeholder Project, because they would be serving as the collectors of all of the original data. We also used some data from the counties and local jurisdictions that they already had available in terms of documentary data. We then conducted a literature review of community planning in other fields and disciplines, and found that there wasn't a lot of research that supported the community planning approaches that folks had. Although there was a lot of great planning and great resources. The Client Stakeholder Project collected data from across the state. It was mixed methods, so there was quantitative data, qualitative data, focus groups, and key informant interviews, and then provided the data to RDA. We provided them TA along the way, so every couple of weeks we'd have a call with all the people collecting data and make sure that we were both helping them build the capacity to collect data, as well as that the data that was coming in was of a quality that would allow for us to do the kind of evaluation that we wanted to do. We then analyzed the data, and we did a couple different, I think we did three or four different cuts of this. So we would do some data analysis and then present it back to the Client Stakeholder Project, get their feedback, both in terms of was there additional questions about what the data could tell us, or some refinement and interpretation that we could go back and look to. And then so we did that three or four times before we actually finalized the results. Once we had the evaluation results, we gathered everybody together and then included county representation because they're the folks who are required to conduct the planning processes, and we presented the evaluation results and some initial ideas on promising practices in community planning, and then we really validated and then refined those promising practices that were finalized at the end of the Promising Practices Summit. A couple of evaluation highlights. So what we found is the more that participants, and these are people with lived experience, family members, and the other disciplines who are required to participate, that the more that people believe that they were meaningfully contributing to programs and services, the more satisfied they were, and the more their trust grew in the mental health system, and the more the planning process appeared recovery-oriented, the more that contributed to personal sense of wellness. There are also outcomes within the mental health system that came from community program planning. These are really based on those MHSA values of recovery orientation, collaboration, integration, cultural relevance, and consumer family-driven services. There was also impacts that we noted on the broader community, that community program planning appeared to result in more of a community-driven approach that emphasized wellness and recovery, reduced stigma, and improved community perceptions of mental health. So let's talk about promising practices, because this is really kind of the meat of it. So a few, there's about 10 of them, so I'm going to go over some of them more quickly than others. The first is to focus on strengths and aspirations, that really grounding this in the values, hopes, and aspirations of each local community is more important than having any kind of standardized approach. That building a foundation based on shared values is really important when you're starting any kind of participatory project. So, Bevan, I'm doing that cursor thing again. You should have told me. That So in California with MHSA, there are values that are legislatively defined, and so when these values specifically were implemented, it yielded better results. The next one is to be strategic, and that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. This, really in the way that we defined it, had to do with that it's often the intention behind the activity and the thought that goes into it rather than what the activities actually are in terms of bringing people together. And so that preparation, having purpose, priorities, and goals, and then being able to connect kind of the things that you do in the planning process to what you're hoping to achieve in terms of bringing people together and the actual plan to be developed is more important than the actual what you do. It's having those linkages. And then also to, in being strategic, to make it really accessible, that the point of these promising practices were really to bring together a diversity of stakeholders. And so to the extent that that can be accessible for all sorts of different people, including people with lived experience from a number of different cultural communities, some of which are more underserved than others, all of which have their own framework of what mental health means and how wellness happens and what it means to be ill. And so to the extent that facilitators and meetings are able to really support that, diversity of people becomes really important. For partnerships. One of the things about participatory planning is to develop those partnerships, that this is clearly a relationally based approach, and that the relationships both allow people to come to the table and then facilitate the trust that and kind of the rapport that allows those discussions to happen. But additionally, that communities are diverse, and especially in states like California where there's, I think, at the state level, more than 20 threshold languages, that there's a lot of different types of communities. And so developing those partnerships allows communities to be able to penetrate the underserved, the unmet, the inappropriately served communities, and hopefully get some representation. So rather than having a planner have to be able to go to each of those communities, but to really seek to develop partnerships, so those communities are able to organize themselves and really show up. So this actually, we identified this through our research, but it also comes out of Fetterman's work in empowerment evaluation, is developing the capacity of people to participate. And this is both individual and organizational capacity that, and I'm going to start, with the individual or organizational capacity, because one of the things that becomes important that we heard a lot was around the meaningful participation, that there was a lot of resistance from stakeholders around this token participation, that it's required that people show up. It's not required that counties do anything with the feedback that they received during that planning. And so to the extent that the planning process is able to build capacity to really value the contributions that are received and then apply them in a way that makes sense and is meaningful is important. Additionally, the organization or the individual capacity of people participating, that folks come in with different levels of knowledge about policy, funding, programs, evidence-based practices, what you can and can't do, the language that you use. And so to the extent that a planning process is able to train stakeholders to meaningfully participate and really level that playing field is important. Few other things that came up, being inclusive, so recognizing the value of all of the voices at the table, but also recognizing that it is about including people with lived experience and their family members as well as other disciplines, and so it really is creating a process where you're able to frame and then hold multiple perspectives and not value one over another. Transparent communication and transparency is really one of the mechanisms that allows some of this to happen in terms of being clear about decision-making authority, how and then how input will be used, so that the purpose, expectations, and impacts are really clear. The last one in terms of promising practices, second to last one, is around sharing responsibility and accountability. So this idea that everybody is there holding up a corner of the table, and that this works best when everybody is accepting both responsibility and accountability for showing up and participating in a way that meets that shared vision that that has been developed at the beginning. The final thing is helping everybody around the table understand that systems change doesn't happen overnight, that these are promising practices identified through funding to transform a statewide public mental health system that happens in 60 different ways in 60 different jurisdictions, and so that these are things that do not happen overnight, and so mitigating some of that frustration of I gave this contribution, I didn't see it in the plan in 3 months, is, well, it may come up in a year or two, that these are things that that can take some time, and helping people understand that at the get-go, that this is something that's going to be a process. I do have a couple of implementation strategies that I also want to talk to you about. So Lake County is a small county up in Northern California. It is it doesn't appear like it should be a diverse community. However, it's got 5 different tribes and over 40% Latino population. Additionally, it has some of the worst health outcomes in the nation, one of the highest rates of poverty in the state, and also a higher proportion of people coming back from California State Prison than any other county in the state. So they asked us to come in and bring together a committee of stakeholders who are representative of the county to engage in planning and evaluation, really to provide feedback and recommendations to this, and this next statement is a vision statement that they came up with, to achieve a more welcoming, engaging, and culturally relevant integrated service delivery experience. And so what we did is we did outreach to bring folks together. We then partnered with them to create the evaluation design and then did a program evaluation cycle that repeated quarterly. So they had 5 sites they were specifically looking to help improve that experience to get to the front door, from when somebody calls to make the appointment to how they get there to what happens when they walk in the door. Are they greeted? Are they welcomed? How long do they wait? Is it comfortable? And so we did that on a repeating cycle. So they collect data 1 month, they would analyze and interpret it the next month, and then develop recommendations the month following that. what we did is a second component of that really focused on building capacity, which was they'd have a two-hour meeting to do the work of the evaluation and then open it up to the larger community and hold monthly learning communities, some of which we facilitated and provided continuing education to clinicians in the department, and some of which were facilitated by committee members in terms of their own the diversity that they represented and helping acculturate folks to the framework of mental illness or mental health or wellness in those specific communities. A couple of things that I want to highlight that were really important. In the outreach and engagement phase, we did a fair amount of intentional design. And so bringing people together, we really looked at, like, what was the geographic or what was the diversity that we wanted to represent and then took a look to see how we could get people in the room. It is very hard to do that in a politically correct way. However, it was really important to do so. We also wanted to achieve over 51% of people with consumers, and so we were able to achieve, when you add consumers and family members, it was almost 100%. We did request written commitment from participants and then also provided stipends for people who were not there as part of their employment. So there were a number of people who ran peer-run wellness centers in the community, and so they were already being paid to be there, so we provided stipends to or scholarships to people who weren't. During the project launch, some of the things we learned: have a longer session to build that shared vision, and then provide a series of training, both content-based about evaluation so they could design that, and also soft skills to ensure that people could meaningfully participate. So we did things around assertive communication and helping them really build that group cohesion and having some of those difficult discussions. In terms of facilitation techniques, one of the things we did was take the idea that evaluation requires that you notice things that are working and not working and have them apply that to get in the practice of giving us that feedback about the actual process of evaluation and then to continuously listen to those concerns and actively troubleshoot those. We also had to be prepared to supportively challenge stakeholders and our evaluation partners throughout the process, that specifically when issues of benevolent or internalized stigma came up. We tended to note those when there was an absence of hope or aspiration in their recommendations. And so that was one of the things that we really had to kind of pay attention to make sure that they weren't having that kind of impact what they meant. And then also, really, we intended to build evaluation readiness over time, and so while we did a series of evaluation trainings towards the very beginning, that the first time they looked at data, I certainly wish I had had like another 15 minutes of kind of data analysis training at that moment, that they were very cranky the first time they saw it, and then kind of as we got to the end, they were not so much, and I think by the third time around, you know, I had a little bit of training and pep talk for them before I started showing charts and graphs, and they were like, what are you doing? We got this. And so it was really great to see kind of their familiarity, their agility really really grow over that period. So in terms of training and technical assistance, there are a variety of things that we did, but specifically providing training and TA around evaluation and research to build their capacity as research partners, but also training and TA about policy issues, trends in the mental health field, and diversity issues to support their capacity to consider new perspectives and not just think about kind of what they knew and what they'd experienced in their community, but what really to think about what was possible. And then training in TA regarding soft skills, really to increase stakeholder capacity to participate meaningfully throughout the system. That there are now 24 folks who have had a heck of an experience really being mental health advocates and participating in evaluation and are now going back to all of the different committees and advisory groups within their community and expecting the department to have data. It's a outcome that I'm not sure the department was expecting, but they're responding and now have to be accountable to their communities in a different way. That is my contact information. Please do not follow me on Twitter, but I'd be happy to take emails.